made a presentation to the Federal Web Managers Council interagency group a couple of days ago, and it's the gist of what I wanted to talk to you about. It's something that we see, and we've seen it in particular over the last couple of weeks with the Occupy protesters in various places. You just never know anymore who's watching you and who's recording you and how they're going to distribute it, do you?
That's one of the hallmarks of digital life now. I argued that there are actually three kinds of valence that occur in this new environment. One is the classic kind, surveillance, a French word meaning the top-down, people who have power, either in government or in corporations or in other ways, watch ordinary people. There are ways to monitor them. A newer thing in this era is surveillance. The sur is from the top down. Sous is the French word for underneath. So it's people in ordinary circumstances who are able now to watch, record, and talk about people who have power. So that sometimes now police, when they stop cars, are going to be recorded doing that. As you mentioned, the Occupy movement has done a lot of streaming video watching how the authorities deal with them. And finally, there's a third brand of this that I call covalence, which is everybody watching everybody else. It's people on social media obviously checking in with their friends and their networks. And so in some respects, we're all living the life of celebrities now, because you never can tell when you're going to be on candid camera.
The idea of this has implications for people who are doing all kinds of things in the federal government, because the federal government traditionally has been closed is not a fair statement, but has been maybe more difficult because so much of it is concentrated here in Washington. And so if in the past you wanted to, say, go and observe the secretary or one of the top level leaders of a particular cabinet agency, you had to schlep to Washington, D.C. You had to find out where that person was going to be speaking and then go and watch that speech. And you had to schlep a very expensive camera along with you if you wanted to record it. Now, pretty much, you can pick a phone out of your pocket or connect with somebody online who has a phone they can pull out of their pocket, show up at that event, put the event on YouTube, and you've got it. What does that mean for somebody who is in a decision-making position at an agency? Maybe not even the frontline leader, but what does that mean about how they should think about how they do their jobs?
I think it's safe to say that they would be wise to conduct their jobs is thinking that somehow, somewhere, it might show up on YouTube or someone's blog or someone's picture feed in their Facebook account, and never assume that the things that might seem private or might seem to be done in the quiet corners of government won't eventually find their way out into the world. So it affects the way that you write emails. It affects the way you conduct phone conversations, because you know these things can be recorded. It certainly affects the way that people act in public, and it's one of the newest things that is emerged out of this arena is that people who act as if they've got nothing to hide, and people who are transparent about what they're doing and how they're doing it, what their motives are, it's a new way to establish trust with audiences. So in some respects, one of the ways that the federal workers might be thinking about acting in this environment is being in conversation, being clear about what's going on, being actually human and explaining why they did what they did is often a way to build support for what they're trying to do.
You know, that's an interesting place to go, Lee, because I've had this conversation with folks in the public affairs shops at federal agencies many times over the years where I've said, I'm not trying to get you. You're doing something well, and public perception is that doesn't happen often in the government, and I'd like to tell your story so that other people can learn from it, and I continue to be surprised at how often agencies decline to do that. What's the culture change that you think would have to happen in an organization, not just a federal agency, but would have to happen in an organization to make people trust themselves and the people that are around them before they can trust a broader group of people?
Well, it's such a wonderfully complicated point. The world of government has sort of special burdens placed on it. When the government makes pronouncements, when the government says information is valuable and important and true, there's a special connection between that information and what people are how people are processing it and thinking about it. One of the struggles that we hear about a lot when we deal with government workers is that they feel the burden of always being right and always being authoritative, because that's what people expect the government to do, and feeling a little bit leery of being in conversation with people, that the government should pronounce about things but not necessarily be in dialogue with people about things. And one of the big culture changes that social media has brought into the world is to think that conversations are taking place all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it's helpful to be part of those conversations. You can learn things. You can help make your points, particularly if bad information is in circulation or out of date information is in circulation. You can add what you know and add to the quality of the conversation and the accuracy of the information that's being conveyed. So thinking that essentially you're in a perpetual conversation all the time with constituents is probably not a bad way to be thinking in this environment where all these conversations are now visible in brand new ways.
You touched on something at the Web Managers Council group that I wanted to ask you to expand on a little bit. You talked about the concept of young people being the most protective of their online reputations. Is there a difference between the concept of my online reputation and my online personal information and privacy in the minds of folks in that age group? And if so, what's the implication there for somebody in a policymaking position?
One of the things that was happening 5 or 6 years ago, particularly as social networking sites were coming into being and as mobile picture taking and videos and things were becoming popular in the culture, there was a lot of concern about young people under age 30, under age 25, teenagers, that there was too much information being shared, that people who were young were not as protective as they should be about their personal information, about the kind of knuckleheads things they might be doing from
right.
The time that might get them into trouble.
Mm-hmm.
And in many respects, what we see in our data now is that young people have really taken that to heart. They are much more vigilant about what's being said about them online. So they are checking their names in search engines. They are checking what their friends do when they tag photos. And in many cases, if they see things that are distressing, either in text or in pictures, they go to the people who have posted the material and say, please change it, or that's not right. And they're just sort of a higher state of alertness to how this might affect their reputation when they are looking for jobs, when they are looking for credit, when they're even looking for romantic partners. I mean, what's the first thing people do now when they're about to meet somebody new? They check them out online.
Google them, yeah.
And so young people, ironically enough, more than old people, are much more conscious and much more deliberate about how they monitor their reputations online.